From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. This is Idaho Matters. Well, welcome to November. That means holidays, which could lead to more outbreaks of COVID-19 and the flu. And we have RSV, which is affecting thousands of kids around the country. Joining us today to break all this down is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have a question for Dr. Pate, send us an email at idahomatters@boisestate.edu and we'll tackle it on the air. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Pate.
Thank you, Samantha.
So let's get a quick update on COVID-19 this week around the country. What's new? Any good news? Any bad news? What's happening?
Well, the good news is that we're not currently in a surge. The bad news is that we continue to have community spread through most of the United States. The other thing of note is that we are seeing some of these brand new, more highly immune evasive. That doesn't mean they completely get around our immunity, but it may mean that people are more prone to getting infected, even if you've been previously infected or vaccinated. You know, these new variants do increase at a much faster rate. And so where we're particularly seeing this is up in the Northeast with a variant called BQ. And there's BQ.1 and BQ.1.1. Those two seem to really be taking off up in the Northeast. And we're watching to see what is that going to mean for us. And we've certainly been watching this in other countries as well that are like right now, Europe and parts of Asia are having some significant surges. In Asia, particularly in Singapore, they've actually had a variant called XBB. And just a little extra credit for listeners for a social gathering. If you want to impress everybody, when the name of the variant starts with X, that means it is a recombinant. In other words, two previous SARS-CoV-2 strains infected someone and they exchanged genetic material to come out as a new variant. So that's what we're seeing there. And that's a little bit concerning if that gets in the United States. Right now, it doesn't seem to be much of an issue, but that may be a harbinger of what's to come.
I don't want to get too technical on you, Dr. Pate, but yuck, because the idea of more and more of these variants coming out that are trying to dodge around, the shots and that are combining, that's just, it's kind of depressing.
It is. And of course, this is a consequence of what we've been warning about since really early when we started doing this show in 2020. And that is that there's more reason to contain the spread of this disease than just worrying about whether you're going to get hospitalized or die. That if left to spread, we would see all these variants and that they might over time learn how to get around our immune systems. And that's what they seem to be learning. And why it is really hard to predict what's going to happen at this moment is you will remember previously, we've typically just had a couple or several variants to worry about at a time. You know, we had Alpha, we had Delta. You know, now there's more than 200 variants out there that we're watching. And what is concerning is that as this virus has given ample opportunity to learn how to get around our immune systems, because so many hundreds of millions of people have been infected, it's learning. And all of these, you know, variants seem to be converging on a core set of mutations that seem to help it be able to get around the population immunity to whatever extent that is that we're accumulating. And so, you know, we don't know what that's going to mean. It could mean that instead of what we've seen before, where we just kind of get a single big surge and then we're done with it and everybody's used to seeing those. If these variants, if, you know, 5-6 of them kind of get taken off in the United States, is one of them going to outcompete the other ones and we really won't deal with those other ones? Or are they, in fact, all going to be causing their own little mini surges where we might see a surge start to come down, get another surge because it's one of these other variants, because we don't know if that immune evasion operates between those variants? In other words, if you get BQ1, does that mean you won't get BQ1.1, or does it mean you won't get XBB or BF.7? Or, you know, we just don't know yet. So it's a little hard to predict, but certainly what we're seeing in other parts of the world is causing me some concern.
Well, there is this idea, I think, that is ingrained in a lot of people that there's one bug at a time. And that's what you got to worry about, and then you move on. And I think that COVID is just shattering that misperception.
Yeah, and Samantha, that's a really great point, because that's been our experience. We've typically just dealt with one predominant variant at a time. But now we're in a position where we could be, I don't know that we will, we're going to have to wait to see, but we could be dealing with multiple. And then, of course, as you said in the teaser to the show, that, you know, that's just COVID. That doesn't even count that we are also seeing a surge in influenza and RSV and enterovirus and rhinovirus. And so, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff out there right now, and we don't know how all of this is going to interact together, although we certainly do have some evidence that you can get co-infected. In other words, you might have COVID and another infection. And in certain cases, that co-infection can make you sicker than if you just had one or the other virus.
That I've seen that before. You know, there's an idea that, well, you just have the flu, or you just have a cold, or you just have strep, or mono, or, you know, fill in the blank with a bug. And then when you can get more than one at a time, but a lot of time, either the treatments are the same, or it's hard to determine, you know, if you have more than one bug at a time, and this is a problem. Let's start with the flu. You had mentioned to me at one point that typically the flu season starts in the South and moves its way up. Where are we right now with the flu?
Yeah, that's what it's doing, Samantha. So what we saw is, you'll remember, I told listeners that I would kind of update them week to week on, you know, when to go get their flu shot. And we said a couple weeks ago, go get it, because it's actually taking off earlier than usual. We don't usually see influenza to the extent that we're seeing it right now. And so we are, you know, at least a good month early. And it looks like we're already starting to see some hospitalizations for severe influenza, which also is a bit early. So it has, as you said, it started in the southern United States, but it is already moving up into particularly parts of the Northeast. And then usually here in Idaho, we're usually kind of on the tail end of that. And usually when we see our big flu activity, you know, it tends to be more around January. You know, I think with what we're seeing, I would not be surprised to see it start really picking up in Idaho, maybe end of this month, maybe beginning of December. And of course, that's really bad timing from the standpoint of holidays, but we'll watch and see. But it is certainly getting traction in the United States.
Okay, let's talk about RSV. I know you talked a little bit about this with Jim last week. Real quick, what is RSV? Why does it hit kids so hard?
Yeah, so RSV is a very common virus. It stands for respiratory syncytial virus. And it is a virus that affects most everybody by the age of 2. The problem is in children that are born premature, in in children that are younger than two, they are the ones that more often are going to get really significant RSV. While most children have nothing more than a cold, other children will get very sick with RSV and may have to be hospitalized either for breathing support or just because especially some of these young children, when they're having trouble breathing, they won't eat or drink. And so they have to go in the hospital to get food and hydration. We are seeing RSV also on the rise in the United States and earlier than typical. So, you know, as we talked about last week with Gemma, we're kind of seeing this convergence where all of these viruses now are kind of starting to infiltrate most portions of the United States and all at once and earlier than usual. The good news is, number one, you can get vaccinated for the flu and do so right away if you haven't. And remember, if you're over 65, get the high dose flu vaccine. So anybody over 6 months can get vaccinated for the flu. Second thing is you can get boosted for COVID. And despite all the talk about immune evasion and all, I want you to understand again, it's a little bit of a misnomer. Yes, these new variants can get around a part of our immune system, but there's no evidence that it can get around all of it. And so every study that we're seeing is still showing you're going to benefit from getting these boosters, even if they won't prevent you in all cases from getting reinfected. They do help prevent you from getting severely ill. And we've got new evidence that it will help prevent you from getting long COVID, although it doesn't eliminate that possibility. So those two, get those vaccines. Then we don't have a vaccine for RSV yet, but we've got great news that just came out this week that looks like we've got an effective vaccine that we may be able to give to moms pretty soon once the FDA reviews it, that looks like it will protect these youngest children, perhaps up to 6 months of age, because mothers will transfer those antibodies to the children. And while we can't vaccinate the children, we can vaccinate the mom while they're carrying the child, and the child will benefit.
Well, that is good news. And, you know, I think that's very important. You've got some steps there that folks can take that are positive. But when you're talking about a convergence of things like COVID, flu, RSV, and then, as we mentioned, the holidays, which, as we know, can be times not only to gather with family, but to gather with family and share your viruses. That can be a problem that could put a strain on healthcare systems around the country.
Well, it absolutely can, and we're already seeing some of that in some parts of the Northeast, as well as a few portions in California just indicated that they're getting stressed, particularly in Orange County and San Diego. So yes, this can happen, and realize we haven't seen the worst of this yet. So it means let's take some extra precautions. Let's be careful. While I said RSV is predominantly a risk for those children under two, it's also a risk for the elderly, and 10 to 14,000 people that are elderly a year will die from RSV. So we need to protect the youngest and the oldest. We need to also protect people from COVID and the flu, get those vaccines. And then really what we need to focus on is the air environment that we're in, to make sure it's well ventilated, hopefully outside, but when it can't be outside, good ventilation and filtration. And of course, whatever these viruses are doing to get around our immune system, they're not getting around our masks. So wear high quality masks.
Dr. Pate, Nancy sent us a question. She says, my teenage son got a racing heart several times in the days following his Pfizer booster, which was shot number 3, including while he was sleeping at night. He had COVID this summer, and she is hesitant to give him another booster. She wants to know your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I can understand your concern. I certainly wouldn't be panicked. What we do see in young adolescent and young men is a higher frequency from the COVID and from some of the vaccines to get some inflammation of the heart, which can cause that racing. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the racing is due to that. But I think the thing to do in both cases, the heart inflammation is much more severe with COVID than it is with the vaccines. So I certainly don't hesitate to recommend those vaccines for young men. But what you want to do is make sure you get your child evaluated. Just have a doctor, your primary care doctor or heart specialist, check and just make sure that there's no evidence of active inflammation, that this might just be residual from that. And then if you get the okay, I would still get your child boosted, because again, that risk of getting it from infection is much greater and much more severe. But what we can do is we can minimize the chance of that by actually just spreading out the vaccine a little bit more, so that instead of getting the Pfizer vaccine within 2 months, we might stretch it out to 3 or 4, and then we tend to see much less of it.
All right. You, Dr. Pate, mentioned this in the last segment a little bit. Sue wants to know, what can be done to improve air filtration, air handling, both at home and at work? I know we've talked a little bit about this in school buildings, but what can you do at home? What can you do at work to help keep that air moving and hopefully, keep the bugs down?
Yeah, and it's a great point, because what we saw in 2020, if you'll remember, is with all of our precautions, masking and distancing and so forth, we hardly saw any influenza or any RSV from our schools. We also saw that it helped control COVID. And so the general principle here is, if we can improve the ventilation and the filtration, we can actually lower the frequency of these winter viruses and COVID too. And I'm a little bit frustrated, because the schools, all their discussions have been around masks. And I think masks are important, but I also am a realist and realize that, kids don't like to wear masks necessarily, and schools, have to back off from that because of pressure from parents and all. But why not invest in improving the air handling systems and the filtration? So for schools, what I think is they should take, I don't know if there's any of these COVID funds left, but I urge schools, back when we had all this COVID funding, upgrade your HVAC systems, increase the air exchanges per hour, add MERV 13 filters or HEPA filters to it. So you're filtering the air and increasing the circulation. There's a bunch of things that we could do that are not inordinate cost. Now at home, what you can do is, I actually have an air purifier that has a HEPA filter on it, and you can get those. But you can also, for those of you that, I know that a lot of people are working on a pretty short budget right now, there's a cheap way to make these filters for your house or even for schools and classrooms. And it's something called the Corsi, C-O-R-S-I, Rosenthal filter. And what you do is you basically can buy 4 HEPA filters from Amazon, which are not terribly expensive. You get those filters and you just get a regular one of those portable fans we've all had, and just go online. You'll find instructions how to put it together. It's very easy. You just tape the 4 sides together to make it a box, put the fan on one end. And then what you're doing is drawing all the air in and through those filters, so that you could do that at home, and you just do one in every room. But the other simple things are, again, it's always safer outside than it is indoors. If you are going to be indoors, you can use a carbon dioxide monitor. You can get those online as well. And I use the monitor. Usually what you'll see for the carbon dioxide levels outside is in the low 400s. And what you want inside is, if you can get it below 800, that will show that you've got good ventilation in your home. So you can, if it's higher than 800, you can open windows, you can open a door, and you'll see that that'll make an improvement. But again, outdoors is always better when the weather permits.
I love the idea of making your own filter, your own cheap filter. That is awesome.
Yeah, and you know, it'd be a great opportunity for schools if they would just pay attention to this stuff. Just have, you know, a great activity for the PTA or whatever they call those these days. You know, you can do a little fundraiser. They're not terribly expensive, and you could set up one of these in every room. And the benefit, everybody agrees we want to keep kids in school. Why wouldn't we do something to decrease illnesses, whether it's COVID, influenza, whatever? You know, it's just it's a great idea, and I see little interest in it. It's mind-boggling.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's see. Next question. Marilyn wrote in, I've followed along and gotten all the shots and boosters as they became available. She got the last booster 3 months ago. Now she asks, should I get the new booster? She wants to know if that will compromise her immunity in any way. She's a healthy 75 years old.
Well, good for you. I'm certainly pleased to hear, given your age, you're in good health. You've done everything you can up to this date in getting your full vaccination and your boosters. The answer to your question is yes. The evidence that we have at this time does suggest that you will benefit. It doesn't mean it will completely eliminate the chance you can get infection. So it doesn't mean you get this new booster and then you can just throw caution to wind. But every bit of evidence that we have at this point suggests that, yes, this is going to help you. So given where you are since your last booster, yes, this would be a great time to get that bivalent vaccine. You can get either one. And I would go ahead and get that because, as I said in the first part of the show, we're not quite sure what's coming at us with all these brand new variants. So good for you, and I applaud you. But yeah, get the bivalent vaccine.
All right. Mary writes, could you ask Dr. Pate to repeat his advice for which arm to have the COVID boosters in? She wants to know, did you say to switch arm to arm for each booster, and is that a good idea?
So great question. And the answer is based on one study. So I don't, you know, before I accept things as certain, I'd like to see it in multiple studies, but we do have one study that does suggest that if you're going to pick arms, pick the same arm as you've gotten your COVID. So same. And so get your bivalent in the same arm that you've gotten your previous COVID boosters, get the flu shot in the other. And, you know, of course, I've told people this and then they call me back 15 minutes later. Wait, did you say same or different? So let me just explain very basically why. So this may help you remember. When you get the injection and it puts the protein there that serves as the antigen, which then prompts your immune response, it's carried to the local lymph nodes. So if you get it in your left arm, that protein is carried to your left armpit, and that's where lymph nodes will start reacting and processing the immune response. That's why some people, after they get the shot, actually get enlarged lymph nodes in the same side. And what we want, so those particular immune cells are already primed, ready to go. There seems to be some evidence to suggest if you get it in that same arm, you might get a marginally better immune response than if you get it in the other arm and those cells aren't as primed. So maybe that will help you remember, but the COVID, same, flu, other.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes a certain amount of sense. So we'll wait and see if there's more info on that, but yeah. Okay. I want to get back to this idea of making your own filter or, coming up with these new ways to make your environment, wherever you are, whether it's home or work or school, a better one, not just for COVID, as you said, but for, breathing in general and bugs. I like the idea of people getting creative, of working around whether it's costs or various problems. I think it's a testament to how people can try to work and overcome these issues that keep coming at us.
Well, it really is, Samantha, and frankly, in this day where pretty much everything upsets somebody, who's going to get upset about this? So, you know, it's a really simple and inexpensive thing. Again, you can just go on the internet and you can find videos that will show you how to do it. It's really simple. And lots of schools, they've just gotten the parents together, bought these HEPA filters, bought these, they're just plain old fans, you know, portable fans, and you just put them together. It's really easy, but they, and then you can use a CO2 monitor before, see what it was in that classroom, get that put together, put it on, see what happens to that CO2 level. It's going to drop. And that means safer air. That means less virus transmission of all kinds.
Now, if Sue wrote back and wants to know, what about if you're in a cubicle, you know, if you're in a cube farm or an office space, to improve that air filtration, is a fan going to help? Just a little fan maybe in there?
Well, you know, that's a tough one, because what happens is these respiratory viruses that are spread by aerosols. So for people trying to imagine what an aerosol is, just think of your hairspray or your deodorant, and just imagine holding that can up and spraying down and just looking at that little mist. And what happens is that little mist, which is the, you know, is kind of the same principle, although it's smaller, what comes out of our mouths and noses that would carry the virus, it's a little smaller than that. But it's a good principle to show you that that mist comes out. And then what happens is that it is carried in the airstream. So when I go to schools and I do my little walkthroughs, what I look in the room is to see where is the air input, okay? Mm-hmm. And if you're not sure, if you just hold a little piece of tissue up against it, if it's the air input, it's going to blow the tissue down towards you because air's coming in. And then look where the air return is, that little thing with the, you know, the vents where it returns. And if it's the return, then what it's gonna do is gonna suck the tissue up. So you can kind of tell the difference. And what I would see in classrooms is amazingly often right under the air return, that's where the teacher's desk was. That's the worst spot, because the teacher's probably at the highest risk of getting infected. So you want to move the teacher's desk away. In fact, you don't even want to have a student sitting under there. But if you look for that, and please understand, a cubicle will not protect this virus. And neither will, you know, we saw all those plexiglass things going up. They don't do anything to reduce this. And so what you really want to look at is what is the number of air exchanges? If you can ask your employer what the number of air exchanges per hour is, I would want it to be a minimum of 4. That means that every 15 minutes, the air is completely circulated. You also want to know that air is being exhausted to the outside rather than recirculated, unless it's going to be subject to filtration like the HEPA filter or the MERV 13 filter. But if you can get even higher levels like 6 instead of 4 air exchanges, now it's going to be exchanged every 10 minutes. That's even better. So you can do that. The other thing you can do is take that CO2 monitor with you to your work, put it in your little cubicle, see what it reads. If it's, you want it down to as close to around, you know, under 500, under 600, under 500, you know, in the 400s optimal, but it rarely are you going to get there. But you want it definitely below 800. If it's more than that, go to your employer and say, you know, we don't have very good air circulation. Is there something we could do to increase that? And they can. They can increase the air exchanges, and schools can do the same thing.
That is awesome advice. Thank you. Oh, that's great. We've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Dr. Pate, thanks so much. Great advice this week.
Well, glad to, Samantha. Thanks so much.
I'm Samantha Wright, and you're listening to Idaho Matters.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.